Good afternoon. I call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. President of seeing a quorum. Secretary will note the roll. Representative Carlson, have you had a chance to take a look at the minutes from April 30th?
Minutes. Yes, I have.
Representative Carlson approves the minutes of April 30th, 2015. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Neutral.
Passed. Members, this afternoon we have two items before us. The first is House File 2106. This is Representative Quam's claims bill. And so I will move 2106 to be before the committee. Representative Quam, you have two amendments that I note in the packet. Which one would you like to take first?
Mr. Chair and members, there's one that came directly from the Claims Committee, the 015-0487 would put in the form that the Claims Committee completed its meeting with.
I'll move the 0487 amendment to put the file in the order that the author would request it. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Amended. There also is in the packet, Representative Quam, the 0715 amendment. Is that Representative Murphy, to your amendment?
That's my amendment, Mr. Chair. And the other one is too.
All right. Representative Quam, any comments on that?
Mr. Chair and members, we had a captivating and enthralling 100 or so claims that we went over in the meeting, and there was one that we all saw that there was, we had problems in that he should be made whole. It was a subcontractor that wasn't paid because the contractor didn't pay him. Mm. We didn't want to set a precedence within the Claims Committee as a whole, but having something added on Ways and Means outside of our Claims Committee, I chair the House Claims Committee, and so therefore I don't feel it would set a precedence upon us if it was added here, and I have no objections to this amendment.
All right. Members, then I'll move to adopt. Representative Murphy, would you move the amendment?
0715.
Representative Murphy moves to amend House File 2106 with the A15-0715 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if staff could tell us if we've ever done this before where the state is paying for a bill that is the responsibility of a general contractor, and what means and what route do we have for the state to recoup this money from the general contractor that failed to pay?
Welcome to the committee. You could identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. I am Michelle Timmons, the reviser of statutes, and in that capacity I also serve as the legal counsel to the subcommittee on claims. Regarding Representative Anderson's question, we did have a claim in the claims bill last year that was somewhat similar to this. It was a Department of Transportation claim. It was a situation where a general contractor had not paid a subcontractor, and DOT had actually done an audit and discovered that the general contractor was not paying prevailing wage. So in that instance, DOT withheld the final payment to the general contractor, and then what was in the session law last year is that one individual, Corey Zion, who had made the claim, as well as several other subcontractor companies, got prorated shares of the amount that was held back. I don't believe we've directly authorized a payment to a subcontractor under quite these circumstances before, but one of the things in Representative Murphy's amendment is to not appropriate the money out of the general fund, but rather from funds already appropriated to the Department of Natural Resources. And I do believe a representative from DNR is here if the committee would like to hear from him about the departmental viewpoint.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be helpful, although I am really concerned that this is setting a dangerous precedent that the state would be doing this. It's a responsibility for this individual to file a claim with the small claims court to get this money out of the general contractor. So we would be doing something that is quite different from what we've done historically. So,
Ms. Timmons.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson. In fact, this contractor did file a claim in court, did use the court process, did get a judgment, but unfortunately the general contractor is bankrupt, so he has not been able to collect on that judgment.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Ms. Simmons, how much could the state be on the hook if this is the path we take for the future for general contractors that go out of business that are working on state projects? Do we have any estimate of how much this would cost the state in the future?
Ms. Timmons.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, no, I do not, although I will tell you at the subcommittee on claims there was discussion by the members along the lines of the concerns that you're raising about would this set a precedent for future liability in cases where someone had gotten a judgment against a general contractor but could not collect. I will say that this case is a little bit different from some others because in most contractual situations, the dollar amount of the projects are such that there's a performance bond. In this case, both the general contractor and the subcontractor were targeted group businesses, small businesses that, and the size of the projects were small. So there wasn't any performance bond or letter of credit or any other way. So Mr. Finn tried the court system, and it did work, and then he got a judgment, but he was not able to enforce the judgment.
Representative Anderson.
DNR.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Well, he's coming down. I would like to add that I have talked with DNR and I have talked with the Department of Administration about the situation and how we could prevent that from happening or to what could be done so that there could be money in case someone wasn't paid by the contractor. And it just got so busy at the end that we have said that we are going to carry on further discussions in the interim so that by the next claim, next time we're doing a round of claims again, that perhaps we'll have an answer so that the precedents won't be able to be, the precedents would be met.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
And I appreciate that, yeah. Representative Murphy, because, you know, we're fixing a problem that's not really the state's issue to fix.
Yeah.
And I would be more comfortable if you were willing to not do this amendment now, but instead take the interim to see what solution could be had working with the department administration and all the other entities involved. Because once we pass this, we are setting the precedence. And there's going to be no incentive to actually fix this problem down the road. And, you know, if we were to go and have every outfit out there that either they didn't like the, it could have been a situation where maybe they didn't like the settlement that they got from the court. Are they then going to come back to the state and say, well, this is what our actual costs are, the state should pay for it? I just see it as a slippery slope that, though I understand what your intention is, I'm just concerned that the conversation that we have today or the conversation that was had in the claims division will be forgotten, and instead this will become the new norm.
Well,
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I appreciate that, and I understand that, and that's why I'm going to pursue it with the Department of Administration and the Department of Natural Resources and every other agency that we usually have or that we sometimes have claims from, because usually they're not the same kind of claims. But in this case, I am sympathetic with the individual that came before us. The court awarded something like $12,000-some, and it was at the initial cost of $8,243 is without interest and without court costs. And so I thought that that would be a fair amount of money to pay Mr. Finn, because he too is in a situation, a financial situation, and needs the money in order to continue his business going on. And his representative wasn't there that night because he was in another committee, and he arrived right after the decision had been made to go on without this award. And I just felt that this is something we have to do now, and we have to put something in place that's well thought out so that there aren't future situations like this.
Representative Anderson, I'm going to let Mr. Lacazmol introduce himself and then give us some idea in terms of his perspective on this, and then follow up with you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacazmol with the Department of Natural Resources. And we did attend the claims committee, and because this was a small contract, under $50,000, and we used the Department of Administration's master contract to have the work done. So then, as the testimony has already indicated, there was no bond required for those small contracts. And the work was done. The subcontractor wasn't paid. He went to court, won a judgment, was unable to collect. So that was the route it took to get to the claims committee. The department's in a position that we can't pay this. We paid for the work that was completed. The work was satisfactorily completed. And we can't pay for it twice unless we're directed to by the legislature. You know, it's $8,000. It's I don't think that it's something that we're going to see often. And I guess it's up to the committee on whether or not they would like us to pursue this or not. He did pursue the normal course by taking the contractor to court, and then it's just unsuccessful in obtaining any funds.
Representative Anders.
Mr. Chair, when was this contract completed, Mr. Lacazmol?
Mr. Lacazmol.
Just give me one second.
The contract, the work was done in 2012.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, okay, so our final payment from the state was in 2012?
No. Let me just dig here.
I think it was 2012.
The date of the claim was in May and June of 2012.
Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's 3 years ago. Do we know when the claim in court, maybe Representative Murphy knows the answer to this, when did he file a complaint, a claim in small claims court for this amount?
Representative Murphy.
The court, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the court judgment was January 23rd 2013.
Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, we're talking things of about 2 years ago, 3 years ago for the contract being completed, and now the state's going to come back and pay for it? I appreciate what you're doing, Representative Murphy, in helping out your constituent. I just don't think that this is something that we want to start. We don't even know how many other ones that are out there in 2012 that could be coming back to the state, and shoot, they could come back even further from that. They could go back to 2010, 2000, you know, and saying they didn't get their money. So we really don't have an idea of the magnitude. I appreciate Mr. Lacamo's comments that he doesn't think that there's a lot of these out there, but if we go back to when the recession first hit, we could be in a world of hurt when it comes to all the different contractors that went out of business and the subcontractors that weren't paid. This is a very dangerous precedent for us to set that we have no idea what the implications might be.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lacamo, a couple questions here. What's the dollar figure that a contractor has to have before a performance bond is required?
Mr. Lacamo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, $50,000 contract.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have we changed that performance bond dollar limit in the last 5 or 10 years? And I've seen legislation come through changing bond performances and limits. Do you know that we've changed that at all?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, those are set by the Department of Administration, and I'm not sure if they have changed in recent years.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Mahoney?
No.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lacasmo, when the state contracts with the general contractor, we naturally assume that they knew who they were contracting with and knew how responsible party this was. Maybe it's time that we do lower that limit from $50,000 down lower, because either that or make sure that every contract that is under $50,000 say that the state is not responsible in any way to do anything for non-payment from the general contractor. There's got to be some disclaimer, because if I had a contract as a subcontractor with the general contractor that was approved by the DNR or any state agency, I would assume that they would be a reliable general contractor. They're just shooting in the wind. We got to have something that, because the state's name on it, there should be some reliability there.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gunther, if there are problems with contractors, we work with admin. We get them removed from the list if it's egregious action. This contractor is no longer on the list. They're actually no longer in business. But before final payment can be made on any contract, we have to receive a certified payroll that certifies they've paid prevailing wages. And we also receive the forms that are certified by revenue that payments have been made. So contractor filed those, but apparently erroneously.
Any follow-up, Representative Gunther?
Yes, no.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lacasmo, under normal business practice, the DNR would be liable for this payment that was never made. If it wasn't the DNR and it was a private business, that subcontractor could lien the project as you an owner. Is the state of Minnesota exempt from that? Does this subcontractor not have a claim against DNR? And you made full payment, I think. First of all, does this subcontractor not have a claim against the DNR? Do you know?
Mr. Lacasmo?
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, I presume that the only claim the subcontractor has would be against the contractor and not against the state.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lacasmo, as I said, if they were working on a private business, they would have a claim to put a lien waiver against a private business for doing sub work on a project and never have gotten paid. And that's why I'm wondering we certainly must have been in this position before as a state when we don't require a performance bond and somebody didn't pay attention that this guy hadn't really been paid or he was fraudulently, you were given documents that were fraudulent that said he had been paid. So if I can follow up on that, Mr. Lacrosmo, did you get fraudulent lien waivers or payment? Is that what you actually got that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, yes, we got the documentation that was required under the contract, and we fully paid our we fully paid the contract to the prime contractor.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Lacrosmo, I think that this is a troubling practice here. This subcontractor worked legitimately for DNR. I don't really know that this should be in claims. I think the DNR, for whatever reason, actually owes this guy the money already. I think Representative Murphy is right to make you pay it. I was adamantly opposed to last year when then Representative Ward came forward. I said MnDOT should have just paid that. They owed that money. They actually had that money at that time. They hadn't fully paid it. I felt they owed it. They were chicken and worried about a lawsuit and didn't want to make the payment. It's much worse situation where we're going now, and we're going to say just because we don't require a performance bond or some kind of a cash guarantee up front from the general contractor, and we clearly don't have the means to make sure they paid the bills because this guy pretended to have paid the bill and didn't. I think DNR should look into whether or not you're obligated to owe this money to this individual and should pay it now and not be in claims court. I would like you to check with the AG and find out if you don't owe this money, why are you exempt of what normal business practice would be? It doesn't do this guy any good to put a lien on the Lake Maria State Park, because I don't imagine, though there's some here at this table that would like you to sell that park, maybe. I don't happen to be one of them, so I don't know that the lien filed against that state park, if poor Mr. Finn's ever going to get his money that way. But I would like you to look at seeing if you don't have an obligation to pay this if you erroneously paid the money in full when the general contractor hadn't paid all his bills, maybe not to your fault, but I'm sorry, sometimes things happen. This guy's got his money coming if he did the work in good faith, which I'm assuming you're not contesting. I think you owe it, and again, I think it's a bad precedent for us to start paying bills like this under the claims. I think we went down the wrong. This is here today because of what we did last year with Representative Ward. That guy had his money coming, and he should have gotten it paid by MnDOT at that time, and I believe this firm owes the money from DNR because we didn't make sure the state, whether we post a bond for everything over 10 grand or however you do it, Patrick Finn's got his money coming, and I would like you to check into seeing if you don't actually owe it to him and can't find a way to pay him, and it shouldn't be through the claims process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative McNamara. I was going to come at it in a similar way, but yet maybe as lawmakers, we're making a decision here that could potentially set a precedence. And will this affect the private sector? Meaning, if I would hire, say, Chair David's right across the table to do a project at my home.
About that, though.
And if I and when I paid him in full. If he would have had Torkelson do some of the work as a subcontractor, and he did not pay Torkelson, then could Representative Torkelson come back on me, even though I paid the contractor in full? That's where it gets messy. And so my question would be, whether it's to the testifiers, the author, or anybody on the committee, the decision that we make here today, will it also have an effect as it pertains to the private sector as well? Because this is unprecedented, and I feel for the person that did the work, and they should be paid, absolutely. However, the state did pay the general contractor in full. It just didn't get to the subcontractor. So I don't know if there's somebody to testify or others who could answer that question.
Rick, before we continue, Representative Mr. Lacrosmo, I'm just curious from a standpoint of the statute of limitations on claims for this type of services. What is the statute of limitations?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question. I think our dilemma here is that how do we pay for the work twice? Because I don't think that there's a good path forward. When we looked at this a year ago when this came up and met with Representative Purcell, the issue was, I mean, clearly this contractor did the work and it was satisfactory work and the subcontractor, and he should be paid. But the route to get to be able to pay him was unclear because the Department of Administration and DNR met with Representative Purcell at that time. And it was mentioned that the claims committee may be a path forward, but we didn't know if that would work or not.
Mr. Lockesmo, I think, you know, from my perspective, if there's, you know, as I look at the chain of command here, we paid for work completed. Unfortunately, in this circumstance, the general contractor got paid, but he didn't pay the subcontractor. So now the general contractor goes bankrupt, and the sub is asking the next one up the line to repay for something that the general contractor already got paid once for. It seems to me, from a contract law perspective, unfortunately, we are not the refuge of final resort, you know, when it comes to contract law. And if we, in a sense, insert ourselves into this contract negotiation once, I think you do set a very, very poor precedent for being the arbiter of final regard when someone has a complaint against a general contractor in a private contract between two going concerns. It's unfortunate that the general contractor fell out of favor and went bankrupt, but that, in a sense, does not fault the state for having to come up with the money to pay for what was rightfully his for the services due rendered to the state, but not, unfortunately, in this regard. So I would tend to, you know, argue that this is an unfortunate circumstance, but it is not germane to the circumstances prevailing under 2106. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, going back to point that through the example that Representative Hamilton was using, I was down that road probably about 30 years ago. I had some work done on my house. Contractor went out of business, moved out of state, wasn't even in the contracting line of work. Several months later, I received a letter from the lumberyard, and they had not been paid for some of the supplies and so on that they had provided to the contractors. So they were asking me to pay. And I did look at the statute. It was during my early days in the legislature, but when you're dealing with lien waivers, and I'll have a question of DNR in a second, I learned a valuable lesson. Any work I've ever had done since, I asked for a lien waiver, so that I'm sure that anybody that's done any work or supplied any materials has been paid. When I looked at the statute, there was a set number of months that in this case, the lumberyard or the subcontractor would have to make a plan. And they were outside that time. I'm thinking, but it's been going back 30 years, I'm thinking it was like 18 months or 12 months or something like that. So that amount of time had expired, so I called the lumberyard and I said, you know, you didn't give me proper notice. The time has expired, and I'm under no legal obligation. And the lumberyard said, oh, we understand, we were just hoping you would pay. And I said, well, I've got no obligation. I've paid for it once, and I don't want to pay for it twice. So my question, going back to, and actually I was thinking of this with Representative Mahoney's question about the bonds at $50,000, but does DNR or any of our state agencies, as a matter of practice, when they have work done, request a lien waiver so that you're absolved of any responsibility regardless of the cost of the project? I think that's sort of central to this whole question. And if you haven't requested lien waivers, then I think it's a practice, just like the person in the circumstance that I described that I was in. Believe me, any work that I have done where there's a supplier, I ask for a lien waiver before I write the check. Sometimes the contractors almost, you know, view that as an offense. And I tell them, well, hey, wait, I almost got burned once, and so therefore I want that lien waiver before I write you a check, and they always provide it. So what is your policy in DNR, or what does Department of Administration recommend on that question?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, I'm not sure that the agencies do require lien waivers, but I'm not positive.
My friendly suggestion would be that you do that. I mean, that would avoid this kind of a situation. I think that should be a good business practice for a private individual or business or a public entity is to get that lien waiver before you ever write the check.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I'm almost 100% sure that government contracts aren't subject to lien requirements. We exempted ourselves. We don't. They can't come in and put a lien on our property. Almost 100% sure, but there's got to be a lawyer around here that would know it for sure.
I'm going to phone a friend. I see a friend in the back, Mr. Thaden. If you wanted to provide some remarks to this, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is Gary Thaden. I represent the Mechanical Electrical Contractors Associations here at the Capitol. And from my work on not only mechanics lien statutes here, but also government payment, government projects are exempt from the lien laws. That's why you have a payment bond instead. And so that's the avenue that government uses is the payment bond. If the government wants to not get the payment bond for a certain amount of money, then that's government's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Thaden. Members and to Representative Murphy on this one. Representative Murphy, I think in light of the timeliness of this and the testimony that we've heard thus far, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to just pull this back and offer it as an amendment on the floor once you've had some additional opportunity to work on the finessing of the language.
Mr. Chair, I do have information that Mr. Finn submitted his money to file a claim with the Claims Committee on March 18th, 2014. So that was over a year ago. You're asking me to hold this for the floor? You're asking me this, who has a historical tradition of not offering amendments. She can absolutely, positively not offer an amendment. And I'm sure Mr. Stone was very surprised when he did get my amendment for this committee. I will do whatever has to be done, Mr. Chair, but an amendment on the floor. Holy cow.
Representative Murphy, I share the concerns that a number of the members of this committee have voiced in terms of the precedent that this type of amendment would set. And in light of that and the predicament that I think it puts the state in due part because of the extenuating circumstances, the delay in bringing it forward to the committee, we are, as I've shared with you in remarks just recently, I think we're inserting ourselves into private contract law if we were to adopt this type of an understanding between private parties to a contract. It's unfortunate that, Top Priority went out of business and is not able to pay thorough and complete. But I don't know that that's germane to the conduct that we as a state owe to either one, because they made an agreement with the DNR. And I think, as Representative McNamara shared, I think there's a bit of a homework assignment for the DNR to go back and work on. On this regard, and to that point, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with Representative Murphy that these people have their money coming. I really would like DNR to look into if this subcontractor followed proper protocol to follow up on getting paid in the right amount of time. Did he come 2 years after the fact? If that's the case, Representative Carlson talked about what happens when you don't follow the law. There is a protocol for them to be paid And that when DNR made a decision to not require a performance bond on this project, they took on some liability for themselves. They saved the 1% or whatever it would have cost you to get a performance bond, but you did take on an obligation that DNR was then responsible to figure out that all the people got properly paid. That's pretty standard for an owner to know that their subcontractors and subcontractors of subcontractors need to be paid and be documented they're paid. And if you don't make sure it happened, you're going to end up being liable. So I think DNR should look and see if this person followed everything in the correct protocol, did the right work, tried to get paid the right way, but a general contractor broke the law, didn't pay the bills, and then actually even provided fraudulent documents that they had paid. I think the owner, in this case DNR, owes the money. And rather than do it through claims and really set a bad precedent, I'm hoping that DNR will look with the AG and see if there's a way for you to admit that you messed up. And the right protocol might be to start to require performance bonds for everything over $10,000 or something. I'm surprised that you're actually, I mean, this subcontract was evidently their only payment. Maybe it says for full and final. So I don't know how big the contract was, but you had a subcontract with a single payment for $8,000. So it must have been a pretty significant sized project, which I don't like the idea of you doing without a performance bond to begin with. So, but I think, Mr. Chair, I don't think it's right to be here in claims. I think we have to get more information and see if DNR can take care of it.
I'm going to first go to Chair Davids and then to Representative Plum.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to respectfully disagree with my good friend Chair McNamara. I may regret these words later, worse than butterflies even, but I don't think the DNR messed up here. I think the DNR is messing with a crook, and it's hard to deal with crooks. As far as the DNR's responsibility, the DNR's responsibility was to pay the general. They did that. The general was to pay the sub, and sometimes in private business, things don't go the way you want them to, and that's the way it is. But this claim, this amendment does not belong before this committee, did not belong before the claims committee, does not belong on this bill or before this committee. The guy got burned for $8,000. That's the way it goes sometimes. But to say the DNR, when they had proper paperwork and paid the bill, is at fault here for what a crook did. I don't know if you can call him a crook at this time. Is it, to Mr. Lockismo, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lockismo, has this gentleman been taken to court or anything? I mean, he's been taken to court. You can't file false documents with the DNR and get by with it. Last I looked. What's the status of the person that didn't pay the bills or went bankrupt?
Mr. Lockismo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative David, I understand from Mr. Finn that he's even been unable to locate the individual from that from the prime contract.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lockismo, is the DNR, since there was false papers filed, is the DNR going to go after him and file charges?
Mr. Lockismo.
Mr. Chairman.
I should have said the alleged crook earlier. He hasn't been convicted of anything yet. The alleged crook.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, no, we have not planned to do that.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just don't see why this amendment is before this committee or is before the claims committee. I mean, there's some creative people thinking, how can we get this paid? This is not the way to do it.
Members and to Representative Murphy, I would again renew my encouragement for you to withdraw this amendment at this time for the reasons that we've all cited. Representative Palm.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And you're seeing here some of the same issues that we discussed in claims. And the general contractor, she is somewhere. But I think moving forward, I'll commit to the author of the amendment, who's the former chair, as the current chair of the claims committee. I will work to see if there's a way that we could possibly pay the subs directly if it's below a performance bond level contract, or some other way that we can avoid this situation in the future. And that as to the timing, we meet about once a year, and March of last year was just past getting into having it discussed. So it is sort of longer timelines. So again, if the author wishes to remove the amendment, we can work and see how we can resolve this for and avoid it for future. That would be perfectly amenable to me.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I will take your suggestion, but I don't want to hear about if it comes up again in a future time. I don't want to hear then that, oh, we're way past the time. Because it's going to be probably next February, March, before the Claims Committee meets again.
Thank you, Representative. And I think you have Representative Palm's assurances that
you'll do everything. And he and I are used to working well together.
Collaborating together on this. And so at this time, members, Representative Murphy withdraws the 0715 amendment to the bill. Any final remarks, Representative Palm?
No, thank you. Just I believe it's in the order that's appropriate and proper.
Members, I renew my motion to adopt and approve House Call 2106 as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Bill as amended is adopted.
Rule.
Good. How are you? How was your weekend? Should be good. Mother's Day?
Yep.
Now you've got something.
Where'd you send that bill?
No.
Where'd you send that bill? Oh,
did you get your number yet? Nope. I heard you.
Everybody's so crabby, I think they're probably not getting ready to put it together. Take a break.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Welcome, Representative Albright. Do you want to move House File 2235 to be members passed to the General Register?
Yes.
Representative Albright.
2235. And members, the purpose for having 2235 before us today is, and I'll request that Mr. Marks respond as well, but there is an effect to a special spending and revenue accounts that we needed to identify and make sure that the T's were crossed and the I's were dotted on this. So if Mr. Marks would just make mention of the source of that fiscal note.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, members, the fiscal note is actually the Department of Administration showing that there's a spending reduction and a corresponding revenue reduction. It's in a special revenue fund account that is used to pay workers' compensation costs for state employees. The detailed numbers are on pages 4 and 5 of the fiscal note.
Mr. Any Chair. Questions to the fiscal note? Seeing none. Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, that is the point of having it here. It actually does decrease both spending and the revenue by $258,000 in fiscal 16-17, but it does not have any effect on the general fund.
Seeing no questions, Representative Albright, you want to renew your motion?
I do, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of House File 2235 being passed on to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The bill is passed on to the General Register. Any other news? The next meeting is TBA. Representative Carlson.
That you're getting to it. I was going to ask if we were planning to meet again this week. So,
Representative Carlson,
in that direction.
It sounds like we will be meeting later in the week, and Chair Knobloch will probably use standard protocol for announcing the next meeting? Do we have any idea? Probably Wednesday, it sounds like. Representative Carlson.
And Mr. Chairman, do we have any idea of what the potential agenda might be on Wednesday? There are not many bills left in committee. We did have an amendment to the budget resolution a week or so ago with some discussion about the flood bill. I don't know if that's the one you're thinking of for Wednesday or...
I think that's one of the possibilities. And anything else that may come up. I guess we're going to be fluid. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder, Mr. Chair, if we could make it clear on the record what the disposition of House File 2106 was and where it was sent to.
Was 2106 Representative Qualms?
Correct, it was.
Claims bill. We'll clarify that it went to the General Register.
Thank
as
you,
amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did we actually? Yeah, we did put an amendment on, as amended, yes. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Was that technically what our motion was? If technically it wasn't, we should probably move.
Members, do you want to
official?
How about if we reconsider the vote on House File 2106? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay. House File 2106 is before us. Members, I'd like a motion. I would make a motion that House File 2106, as amended, be passed to the General Register. Discussion? We good with that? Be referred to the General Register. I'm supposed to change that, I guess. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It's amended as a patent. Thank you. We're done. We're adjourned.